On this episode of the LTD Podcast, I am joined by the CEO of Anzu Robotics, the great and powerful Randall Warnes. Anzu Robotics is a relative new kid on the block to the drone industry, but that's not stopping them from shaking things up. There's a lot of buzz around two new drones in the industry in the form of the Raptor series from Anzu Robotics. We'll be talking about the Raptors as well as the history of the company to this point and plans for the future for Anzu Robotics. So let's not waste any more time. Let's talk drones. What's up? It's Chris, the Drone Geek, and welcome to another episode of the LTD Podcast. The LTD Podcast is brought to you by The Droning Company, the number one online resource for commercial remote pilots based internationally now. We are serving the entire world with The Droning Company, so make sure you check them out online, thedroningcompany.com, and their YouTube channel as well. Make sure you get subscribed. Lots of great content, including a podcast featuring the very guest that I have on today. I am joined today, as I said in the intro, by Randall Warnes from Anzu Robotics. You've probably seen some things on the internet if you've been going through social media, reading the news, whatever the case may be, the green machines that you've seen all over the place. First of all, Randall, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been an awesome time sort of getting to know you and getting into the nitty-gritty with Anzu. So before we get into, you know, some of the more nuanced parts of it, tell us a little bit about you as a professional in the industry, your background, your experience, and what led you to where you're at today with Anzu Robotics.
Sure. Well, let me do it quick. So in June of 2014, I just finished graduate school. I was off to Officer Candidate School to be an intelligence officer for the U.S. Navy. And in the waiting period between grad school and OCS, I met two guys in Las Vegas who said they wanted to start a drone company. I'd just done a lot of work on military technology projections and things like that. So I met with them and they basically put a Phantom 1 on the table and said, we want to make a retail store for these. We started with a $25,000 investment on in stock of DJI products. And we were doing about $1.4 million a month, 9 months later out of our shop in Vegas. We opened up 15 locations around North America, from Honolulu to Miami, two of them in Canada. And so at one point I had more drone employees. I think I had 60 something employees that were face to face with customers every day talking about drones in 2014, 2015. So there wasn't many folks that had that repository of data that were seeing all the use cases and selling drones at that time. In October of 2015, DJI reached out to me and asked me to join DJI to start a collection of drone stores that would be DJI branded. When I arrived in Shenzhen in November of 2015, they basically said, never mind, but we have this relationship with FLIR. We built a product, but we don't really have much else behind it. So then was born DJI Enterprise, started in December of 2015. I ran DJI Enterprise for about a year and a half, left to go to FLIR, where I was there for 4.5 years as a partner developing with DJI, as well as serving the entire globe for aerial thermal imaging needs. Was a big evangelist of thermal imaging being used by drones and democratizing the skies, not only with drone technology, but with thermal technology. I was briefly the CEO of Autel Robotics. That was a 9-week experiment, which, led to a lot of things, scars included, but I think it also kind of told me that I was capable of taking on that level of position in the drone space, that, you know, the years of listening to end users and really caring about the work that I do put me in a position to be the head of an organization as highly touted as Autel. And so fast forward a few years since then, 6 weeks ago, we launched Anzu Robotics as a drone manufacturer with a very high quality product. But I feel like, you know, it's really an amalgamation of all the things that I've been through, which is being a part of 5 different drone manufacturers, 10 years in the space, like really doing as much as I could to evangelize technology, that I had an opportunity to build something unique the first time that anything like it has been done, and really try to keep a steady flow of and source for affordable commercial drones available in the United States and the other markets that we serve.
That's awesome, man. And what a resume. I mean, seriously, you go down through that and you're checking all of the boxes. I mean, the major players in the game. So if anybody's got perspective in the industry, it really is you. I would put you in the same echelon in terms of experience and resume as like a John McBride. You know, like that's amazing how much work you've put into the industry. And really, it sounds like you've been here since sort of day one. I mean, you know, the drone industry's evolved in some weird ways. Like you have the guys that do the Model RC and, you know, there's argument that they're the ones that started it, but really the modern drone industry did start around like 2010, 2012, you know, right at the beginning of the 2010s, teens, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. So behind me, I have my Phantom 1 FC40 right there that really changed my life. And it was really, you know, saying yes to something that didn't necessarily like fit in my long-term vision for what I was trying to do with my life, and it ended up altering my life entirely. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, John McBride is very, very different to the industry than I am. I think that some folks need or want to have a voice of someone that has been there and done that and is hands-on with the products, with the technology, and can validate, you know, claims on it. I've never claimed to be a drone guy. I mean, I'm a Part 107 pilot. I fly here and there. But as far as my industry experience, me being with the manufacturers, making decisions with manufacturers, representing, you know, tens of thousands or in some cases hundreds of thousands or millions of drone pilots with the organizations that I was a part of, I think that I've been really lucky and blessed, for lack of a less cheesy word. I've been really blessed to be in that situation. And one thing that I think is I value a lot is that I grew up kind of in lower middle class, kind of the hood. Like I was not expected to make anything of myself. And I've decided that this is like, I could put a blue collar approach to something like this and be with the people that I'm serving and never shy away from, you know, those conversations of the people that actually make this thing work, rather than just sit as an executive of a drone company and, you know, just put on my white collared shirt and talk to investors and stuff like that. That's never been my way. And I think it's allowed me to have 10 solid years of really good information on how a drone company should and could be run.
Yeah. And there's a, first of all, I also want to say it's inspiring to me too, because your story is eerily similar to mine, even down to like the detail of your first real break into the industry took place in Vegas. And like, your first drone was a Phantom. Mine wasn't a Phantom 1. Mine was a Phantom 3. But, you know, there are a lot of similarities there. So that's, you know, that's encouraging on my end. But now, the one thing that we really lack in the industry right now, on the Western side of things at least, is somebody that truly understands what needs to happen. You see a lot of companies that get started by maybe a drone guy or maybe not a drone guy or a drone person for that regard. But what ends up happening is if they don't truly understand the intricacies of not just the technology, but the way that it fits into workflows across many, many different verticals, those companies tend to not do well in the long run. So having somebody like you that can sort of look, I've seen it work and scale the way that it should scale. This is what needs to be done. That's really important, especially in the face of what we're facing today with legislations that are being passed.
Sure. I think something I've said for a long time is I've probably seen more drone companies start and fail than anybody on the planet. That could still be true because of the places that I've been and my longevity. And so I do think I have a good idea of what works and what doesn't work. I think that another thing is that I don't feel like I'm not an engineer. So I do have, you know, some business acumen that is just learning from experience in the drone space. The drone space raised me. So it's really all I know. And so, you know, as a CEO of a company, it wasn't like I was an opportunist outside of it, looking at where VC funding is going and followed that. It's not that I'm a technologist by trade and, you know, drones were just the next thing. This is where I've been all along. And I feel like it's, you know, in some ways it's my duty to myself to take this journey that I've been on and keep leveraging it and keep using it. Heaven knows there's been days that I've been like, the drone industry and I are just, we're going to break up and that's going to be it. Because it's hard. It's complicated. Before Anzu, I didn't know where I could go, you know, take my talents to South Beach, so to speak. Like I didn't know what place. I've been at DJI. I was at Autel. I was at FLIR. I don't know if I'm SkyDO DNA and, you know, Parrot has their place in the market and they're continuing to do great, but they have their people. Where do you go when you have this this rocket fuel that you want to put into an engine, but no engine is built for it? No engine knows how to use it. And I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back by using that metaphor. It's just, I feel like I have a resource that the drone industry can use, and me fighting on behalf of the end user and me fighting on behalf of where we've been and how hard it was to change. When we said drone in 2014, people imagined a UAV with missiles on it. Then we changed that to this toy, this benign thing. And now we're having legislation turn that on its head again because of the success of drone use in Ukraine. And, you know, I feel like what I'm trying to do is use my contacts, use my position, use my resources to get back to a place of sanity. And if I can't do that through legislative change and influence, what I can do is make a product that keeps the doors open for pilots that are used to flying products that are affordable and that just work really well.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I want to say I've only, we made first contact right before AUVSI 2024, but I've really only known you or had any personal interaction with you for about the last 45 minutes to an hour. But the one thing, that I've picked up in that time, at least the my initial perception of you is that you are different. And there is a DNA component to this. And I liked that analogy that you used. I know that it might've seemed a little bit, patting yourself on the back, but I think it's actually a pretty apt analogy, in that, yeah, you have a vision. You want to provide to the drone industry and put energy into it, but you're there. It's like a square peg in a round hole sometimes. And that's why I think Anzu Robotics is such an interesting thing for a variety of different reasons, but it comes down to this base principle in my mind, which is you understand the needs and are actually empathetic and sympathetic to the needs of the end user. That's not always the case. And, you know, one of the things that is evidenced by that, I want to make it very clear here. I do like DJI products. DJI is my brand of choice. With the legislation that we're facing here, there are going to have to be maybe some alternative plans for me in the future. And Anzu looks so attractive for the reason that you're thinking about the end user. And what DJI did that sort of turned me off to them momentarily was with the inception of the Mavic 3, you sort of lost the flexibility that drones once had. You know, it used to be you could go to Best Buy, pick up a Phantom 4, you could pick up a Mavic 2, you could go online, B&H, wherever you shop for your technology at. And you would have an aerial imaging solution that went beyond just photos and videos for creative purposes. You'd be able to use a lot of that multimedia, as long as the hardware matched, for instance, like the Phantom 4 having the mechanical shutter, for photogrammetry, for, you know, mapping, modeling, 3D things. It expanded beyond things, and it gave people exposure to a different way of using drones. It's not just for your photos and videos. Now take that data you collected and you can create like a down to a centimeter accuracy map that can be used for land surveying. They took that away with the Mavic 3. And that's one of the things I want to talk about with Anzu as well. We're sort of putting the cart before the horse, or at least I am. Let's talk about the Raptor series, because everybody's seeing these things. We've sort of heard the nickname, the green machines. You know, tell us a little bit about the idea, the conceptualization, and bringing the Raptor to life.
For sure. So, I mean, 10 years in the industry with relationships that not only as a former DJI employee, but also as a DJI partner at FLIR, we went down the road of discussing the possibility of manufacturing DJI products in the United States as FLIR as early as 2018. So this is not a new conversation for me, as far as how you could approach issues with country of origin and the geopolitics around China in the West today, and not even the West, it's expanding beyond just the West, but how we respond to geopolitics and drones. 14 months ago, early last year, there was a conversation about how the loss of markets, like in Florida, with public safety and other governmental agencies being prohibited from buying Chinese manufactured drones, or drones that were not on the blue list at the time, how that can be addressed. And so what went from a conversation to being like, look, what you could do is, you know, continuing the grassroots efforts like the Drone Advocacy Alliance and things like that to try to get the word out, talk to legislators, make sure that further bans and further legislation don't happen without proper education of what they're actually doing and who it impacts. There were conversations like that. But what it led to is an opportunity to do to create a licensing agreement with DJI. So like I mentioned, first of its kind. I mean, like the behemoth of multiple billion-dollar revenue company DJI is licensing their technology to an organization that can manufacture their technology in a different way to make it so that you can keep the doors open and keep using the technology that you've trained on, built your entire businesses on, etc. So we felt comfortable with the concept, getting to the point where we're at today, where we're manufacturing actual products. There's users, there's, a lot of things have transpired. It wasn't trivial, but we basically have licensed the Mavic 3 Enterprise and the Mavic 3 Thermal drones, and we manufacture them in Malaysia. Then we take basically the SDK and the firmware, and we've secured that data to make sure that the endpoints are pointing to AWS servers that are owned by our software partner Aloft, to get past the data security components of it. We've also gotten past the country of origin as well as the ownership, country of ownership, because I'm an American citizen. All the ownership of Anzu is American citizen. So we're getting past those hurdles. But I think that the future of Anzu is going to be much different as an evolution, where we're going to try to make it so that we're getting not like the low hanging fruit or the least common denominators, but we're trying to go into more advanced, difficult situations like we're seeing in Florida and Mississippi and other states, or potentially federal governments and large enterprises that are taking the approach of not using Chinese drones, not using DJI drones, or if the Countering CCP Act passes, banning all FCC communications from DJI drones. So there's a lot happening, and we're just trying to be ready for whatever shape that takes to make sure that you can buy a drone for under $10,000 and it does what you want it to do, and that there's not like an artificial monopoly that is created because of all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's a fascinating thing because of the legislation we're facing. And I guess one of my first questions about your journey and, what Anzu Robotics represents and what you're hoping to accomplish with Anzu and the Raptor series is, there's obviously still, it's not a connection. That's not the term I'm going to use, but you have a licensing agreement with DJI to be able to essentially take the Mavic Enterprise and the Mavic Enterprise Thermal and create the Raptors with that yeah, that idea in mind. Have you faced any pushback from, politicians? Like, one that comes to mind that I'll reserve my judgment right now, but I'll say not a number one fan of her is Elise Stefanik. I know that she's very vocal, and she likes to, try to shoot things down as they pop up as potential solutions rather than going just full on, let's just put all of our eggs in the American basket, the American manufacturer basket. What scrutiny have you been up against as the representative for Anzu Robotics?
Yeah, so I will say, first of all, I am an American manufacturer. I represent an American manufacturer. The manufacturer is in Malaysia, but that's normal. I mean, Apple is an American manufacturer, and they manufacture in China. That's not how we define what an American company is, which I feel like with Congresswoman Stefanik specifically, it's unfortunate because 2 weeks ago there was an article that was written in the New York Times that heavily was revolved around me personally, the company Anzu Robotics, but me personally, and reflected what we're doing maybe in a way that I don't necessarily see it. Not from a negative standpoint, but from the solo standpoint that makes everything kind of seem as though there's a shell company-ness of it. Now, if you look at the definition of a shell company has ownership from one company, basically creates a pseudo company that just kind of houses in name technology. Maybe there's no transactions that go on there at all. Or maybe there could be some. This is an entirely like separate, uncontrolled entity that just has a licensing agreement. And I think that Congresswoman Stefanik in that article said something along the lines of, we will hold all DJI shell companies accountable. Now, cool. Hold all of the DJI shell companies accountable. I'm not one. So, the insinuation that Anzu Robotics would be, because that's what the article was about. I think that's a misstep. I think that that's a poor use of words for something that is unproven and can be considered a defamation in a lot of ways. For, you actually have to be a shell company to be called a shell company, especially by an elected official. Right. But yeah, hold shell companies accountable. No problem. This is not diversion from or circumventing legislation. This is just adopting it and basically complying with that legislation. And I think that that's the biggest thing that needs to come across with what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to just hold my, what I'm thinking in my head about that particular congressperson. But I will say this, I think if I was going to give people like that the benefit of the doubt, and there are Elise Stefanik is sort of the face of it because she's been the most vocal, but there are a litany of other congresspeople that are behind it and have the same sentiment. So as much as like she's been made this figurehead and she's made herself that figurehead, it's not just her. There are a lot of other ones that are pushing for the same things. But I think what's going on here, and you're actually sharing that with me, it's the first time I've heard about that particular situation, sort of reinforces what I think. I think a lot of it is a woefully misinformed group of people that are trying to make decisions based upon this boogeyman that is DJI. They're trying to make, you know, them out to be the bad guy, get rid of them, push them out of the market. And it's sort of sucking companies like yours into that orbit because you're not a shell company, but, you know, you're being mislabeled as one, which, you know, for a budding company, a young company like yours could be detrimental. And that, you don't want to start that way.
Sure. I think that, you know, you mentioned that there's a podcast with John McBride from the Droning Company that we talked a little bit about this. I think that there's a misconception of how much work has actually occurred, right? It's very easy to see a green painted Mavic, which is, you know, the uninformed person, even in the drone space, is going to be like, oh, it looks just like a Mavic, but it's green. It was painted. It's like, no, that's like plastic molding that goes down an assembly line that is very complicated to get right. That is just like one little tiny piece of like this whole picture of building this product. And there's this in the New York Times, it mentioned my soloness as an entity. I mean, R&D was a licensing agreement through DJI. We have a contract manufacturer in Malaysia. We have a 3PL, third party logistics, warehousing and shipping company in Utah that we pay. We have a dealer network. We have Aloft writing our software. We have US-based R&D that's being done to develop apps and capabilities of the drones. So there's a lot of people being paid, a lot of people that are benefiting or part of this process. But as a young 6-week-old business, I never thought I'd have arrows of a congressperson and a New York Times article and, you know, all these other things that have come along with it. I don't shy away from it. I'm grateful for it. I actually had an hour and 15-minute conversation with one of the staffers from Congresswoman Stefanik's team. And I love the idea that I was able to speak for myself. I don't think it did anything. I think that there's foregone conclusions, but that's the reality, how I take it. You mentioned, you know, the frustrations that you might have with her or with other congresspeople. They're just doing the best that they can with the information they have. Mm-hmm. And I think that the only fairness is to say we're all human beings. We all have our journey. We're all doing our things. Today you're recording a podcast. And when you did your intro, I was like, damn, he has a good intro. Like you have the right personality for it. You have the right voice for it. You have the right setup for it. You took this seriously. And it takes a lot of doing to be consistent in creating content. You have to think of ideas. You have to put yourself in the situation to just do it, even when you don't want to. Like I've been there and done that. And that's your journey today. My journey today is the CEO of Anzu Robotics, and I wish that I at least got the consideration from Congresswoman Stefanik and others that are looking at the drone space where it's like, this is just a guy with an opportunity to do something. And instead of assuming that we know all the details, or instead of saying something like a shell company in a New York Times article to drastically impact an American citizen's life as an entrepreneur, you might think like, you know, the information that he has, Randall Warnes has, is that DJI was his employer, has served millions of drone pilots. The data leakage has never been shown. Mm-hmm. It's never been published. There has been concerns from Department of Homeland Security, from U.S. Army about data when it comes to DJI products. Nothing has been shown. And the times that NASA, Department of Interior, others have done actual audits have said there's no problems. Mm-hmm. So we as drone folks only have the information that we have. Mm-hmm. And I go on the faith that DJI is a company that wants your money. But they're not bad people. They don't want your data to sell it to the Chinese government. There's no CCP people working for DJI that are like telling them what to do and making sure that they get every wildland fire that a fire department in Florida ever captures so that they can do something with that data. I don't believe that.
Right.
But that's me having that information. That's me making my assumptions. If Congresswoman Stefanik, who is a privileged person in Congress that has access to information, does know something I don't know, she should just understand, I don't know that. So you have to give someone the benefit of the doubt, whether they're a congressperson that hasn't spent 10 years in drones, or they're an entrepreneur that hasn't spent time sitting through classified disclosures of what DJI is actually doing.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, for a metaphor. It really is, I think, a misinformation thing. And it's both sides. Like you said, there could be information they're sitting on. The question I would have is, if it's a national security issue and they're sitting on something that we don't know, why isn't being shared? Because I'll tell you, if there was a scenario where that was happening, my favor towards DJI would probably change on a dime. It would change if that was happening. But
mine too. My whole business is tied up in this. Like, I'm vulnerable, but I've went through and taken steps to make sure that we know the data is going to where it's supposed to go.
Yes.
And have we gotten to the point where we know every line of source code? No, because DJI is a business and they're not going to give away their keys and be like, hundreds of millions of dollars in R&D. Here you go, Randall. Like, replicate this when stuff goes poorly. Like, it doesn't make sense for them to do that. But I trust in the product. I trust in what I'm putting forward, and I'll be accountable for what I'm putting forward. But I think that if I can say I'm a U.S. entity, manufacturing in Malaysia, U.S. software that's all pointing to AWS servers, not sending anything back to DJI, no control from DJI, they don't tell me what to do, I don't give them any data, Congresswoman Stefanik should be like, well, you're kind of doing all the things, so good luck.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, I'm just hoping that that New York Times article, I have to go read that. I have not read that yet.
Oh, serious. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I got to go read that.
If you don't have a subscription, I'll send you one of my free reads. I'll hook you up.
All right. I have to read that because now I'm very curious as to what was said, what was thrown around. I just learned of that article in the past hour or so. So, interesting stuff. I do want to put the focus back on Anzu and the Raptor, though. Sure. A lot of the viewers and listeners here are drone pilots and users that are in fear right now because of what's going on. A lot of the people that watch my show, watch my channel, or listen are DJI enthusiasts or Autel enthusiasts. They use that technology. And I think anybody that's deep enough into the industry understands that if DJI is the first domino to fall, Autel's right behind them. So those folks that are using Autel right now, even though they're not quite under the same microscope, it's just a matter of time. So a lot of the people listening to this, watching this, are looking for an alternative solution that they can pivot to in the event of a worst case scenario, or maybe even not in the event of a worst case scenario. They just want something a little bit different. Let's talk about the Raptor. First of all, we've touched on it a few times, the data and the servers and how that all works together. One of the big concerns and one of the things that is driving a lot of the legislation that's being put against DJI right now has to do with where the data that's being collected by these drones is going back to, and it would be a Chinese server. So talk to us a little bit about how Anzu solves that problem.
Yeah, so basically within the code of writing, both firmware and the SDK that we've written the app with Aloft on, is there's endpoints. So data at some point hits a wall and it says, okay, data's here. Now it needs to go somewhere. It needs to go to a server. It needs to go to a URL, wherever it goes. All of those endpoints have been changed to Aloft-owned AWS servers. It's going to a place that is not DJI. It's not shared and it's encrypted and all of that. We paid for a third-party penetration test from an organization called White Knight Labs to go through and validate that we had indeed done all the work that we said, because we can't expect you, an end user, to say, I'm going to go through the code and make sure that you have done what you said you're going to do.
I wouldn't know how to do that.
So we paid an organization, an independent organization, to go through and verify those endpoints for the data. It's all staying within the ecosystem. They took a static drone, basically the drone sitting in front of them, as well as the drone dynamically in flight, and tried to access data, pull data off of it, divert data, weren't able to. We feel very comfortable with saying that your data is your data. It's either on the SD card or when it goes to a cloud for whatever reason, it's going to an AWS server in Virginia owned by a loft that's encrypted. There, with Anzu, I would say data security, we've covered it. And that's whether you believe DJI is the boogeyman or not. We've covered that your data is going to one place and it's us. And we're not sending that anywhere. I'm beholden to the laws of the United States. I'm beholden to folks as an executive of a company. I'm telling you what I know, what I see, and what I'm doing. And no data is going anywhere but where it's supposed to. Okay. Yeah, so that's that aspect of things.
Okay, gotcha. That's good to know. The piggyback question I have off of that is, again, there's going to be a mixed bag of people that you're dealing with. You're going to have end users that are, you know, just looking for something to pivot to. You're going to have end users that are going, hey, you know, maybe it's time to move on from DJI anyway. And you're going to have end users that are still skeptical of everything new being thrown at them. For those folks that are in a worst case scenario, I'm skeptical of every piece of technology I'm using and the security of my data. Do you have more of like a black and white? Do you have like an offline mode? Like I know DJI just came out with their offline mode for their enterprise solutions.
So you don't need to transmit data at all for sure. Okay. But I would say that for folks that are concerned, I mean, you're asking a data related question. Find me a manufacturer that has shown a third-party penetration test on where their data is going, and I'll show you Anzu Robotics, because I think they're the only ones that have published that.
Yes.
So we're trying to take the steps beyond to show that, yeah, we licensed some technology, but we've done all the right things. As far as the flight experience and the data collection experience, the payloads that are on there and what you're getting out of that product, it's a one-to-one, same experience with DJI. Like, I have no question that someone flying our products is going to be like, yeah, it's amazing. Flies amazing. Data, the pictures that it takes are amazing. All of that stuff is fluid and at the top of what should be expected in the drone space. When you're talking about the different customers that exist, we've existed as an entity for 6 weeks and 4 days. It'll be 7 weeks on Wednesday. And we have customers. We've sold hundreds of drones. They just started shipping last week because of the penetration test that I mentioned. We publish that online. You could go on our website and download the third-party report on that penetration test. But we know we're serving someone. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about alternatives, am I an alternative for the Department of Defense? No, I don't think so. They could choose that. It's not my prerogative to tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. But that's not who I'm trying to sell to. Sure. If you are if you have a nuclear power plant, nuclear facility, and you do the inspections of that, like just out of complete triple checking, use something else. Like just don't. There's no reason to go into sensitive assets. And I'm not saying data secure, but I'm saying just like that should be anyone's way of thinking. Is if I have something super super data sensitive. Err on the side of nothing has ever touched a Chinese manufacturer, whatever. NDA sure. compliant, use something from the blue list, whatever. Something the DOD has flushed through. But when we're talking about folks that are either large businesses, large enterprise businesses, small drone service providers, public safety, if your customer, whether that is the city that or state that you have jurisdiction over, your community, or if it's the asset owner of the solar farm or the the farmland that you're going to survey, if they are saying, can't use Chinese drones, can't use DJI, Anzu Robotics is the best alternative for you today.
That's awesome.
Period. There are customers that are believing that see that opportunity. They're like, look, my business is going to keep going forward because I couldn't enter the door with something Chinese. This is not Chinese. Couldn't enter the door with something DJI. This is not DJI. Mm-hmm. That's phase one of all of this. And I think that what we hope to do is evolve so that there's more complex things. Like I need something NDAA compliant. I need something that, does has different attributes as far as use case capabilities. And we address those too. But as an alternative, if you could buy Chinese all day long, no reason not to.
Yeah.
But if you can't, like there's a path, and that's what we're trying to offer.
And that's, you know, I come back to just guys like me, and, you know, we sort of talked about in an offline conversation and in, on the other podcast, you know, there's this division, right, between folks that are, they will use Chinese, they're allowed to use Chinese, that's all they're doing, or they have consumer drones. And that's more so the differentiation here is they've got consumer drones. These consumer drones don't necessarily need to be from any particular country as it stands right now. It's just for fun. It's just for recreation, or maybe some small business stuff. And then you've got enterprise customers over here where, you know, stricter regulations, you know, the technology on board is different, a little bit more expensive, you know, all those things come into play. But there's, it's not a black and white thing. And I think that's a common misconception in the world of drones is you've got your consumer pilots and you've got your enterprise pilots. That's not how it is. It's more of a gradation. And you've got this big segment right in the middle here. And that's where I fall. And that's where I think a lot of people fall. People that are trying to graduate their small business using drone technology from those smaller consumer platforms up to an enterprise platform that is more capable, more robust. And that's where I see Anzu really succeeding as we move forward here, is I think it's going to be guys like me that are looking at your solution, looking at your platform going, that's what I need, not just to take the next step up, but to know that when I take the next step up, it's going to be a lot less volatile than purchasing something Chinese in the current climate. Of course, those Chinese drones, DJI, Autel, they are fantastic, efficient, cost-effective. Everything about them is good, especially for a smaller business or organization. But if that's not an option, Anzu Robotics is there. And I like that idea, you know.
Yeah, so you mentioned this gradient from consumer to professional user of drones. I think that there's a gateway drug of drones, which is fly your first drone. Mm-hmm. Most people are not going to fly a Skydio X10 as their first drone. No. Most people are not going to purchase a Skydio X10 as their first drone. Mm-hmm. You need something to learn on. You need something to build the passion on. The unfortunate thing about this podcast, the podcast with John McBride, the SUAS News, I mean, I'm sorry for throwing out other publications, but I've talked to plenty of drone people. No, we all get it. We all understand what's at stake. We all understand that tens of thousands of people's jobs that go away if DJI gets banned from the United States, because you're not going to say, oh, I guess I'll just go ante up another 15 grand for a different platform that maybe does what I need it to do. Like, I'll go just get a job doing something else, which we're going to lose a lot of talented people, a lot of experienced people. A lot of the mind share that we have in the United States today as drone users, now is they're going to go elsewhere. And the software developing companies and others that are part of this ecosystem are now going to go work for Apple and Google, and we're going to lose smart people in the drone space for a very long time. I've said that it's going to turn into the dark ages if we lose DJI, which is kind of factual.
Yeah.
But again, the gateway drug of drones. I remember sitting in my drone store in Las Vegas, and we got broken into, and there was this this reporter that came saying like, oh, drone business gets broken into 3 times in like 1 week. And so they did this news article in Las Vegas about it. And I was like, you want to fly one? He's like, no, I don't never flown one. I was like, just do it. Like, it's easy. It's simple. It does everything for you. Mm-hmm. So that guy was convinced. And those were the early days when it was just like, not a lot of people had flown them. And you could just see the joy and the trust that is built so quickly in flying a quality drone product, is that it holds stable. There's not much to it. You just get it. And one of my good friends, Dr. Ian Kerr of Ocean Alliance, has said drones democratize the sky. 100%. That's what it's done. Data collection from the sky is now available to everybody until you make the price point $35,000.
Yes. Yes. Right? And that's – go ahead. Sorry.
No. So I'll finish my point.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
One thing we talked about this New York Times article that you haven't read. One thing that is so frustrating about that is that I have said for my drone career how difficult it is to educate people that are not inherently drone people. If you are interested in technology, or you're an RC pilot, or you just figured out like this was a thing for you, awesome. You're part of the tip of the iceberg. You're part of the few people that actually get it. But even if you've been flying for like a month, you're still part of that group of people that just, you understand what we're doing.
Right.
But the vast majority of human beings do not care about drones. They don't know how they're used. They don't know the efficiencies, the safeties. They don't know their communities are served by them. They know nothing. And what happened with the New York Times article is I had an opportunity to engage millions of people with an article that are not drone people and tell a story about what we're doing, why we're doing it, what is at risk. And all of that was shoved to the side to talk about me as a sole proprietor in a business and to have a congresswoman say all shell companies of DJI are going to be held accountable. It was the wrong story for us to be able to say, look, there are jobs at stake, livelihoods at stake. There is no proof that has been submitted. As Americans, we should be like, yeah, we want American sensationalism. We want to win every gold medal. Mm-hmm. But you don't win gold medals by disqualifying everybody else you're competing against for BS reasons. That is not who we are. Yet that's my experience as the CEO of Anzu Robotics, is I'm watching an industry be mistreated and unfairly guided by legislation. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe in it. And I think we do have to speak up.
No, I can't agree more. And the irony of the situation is it's not lost on me, and it shouldn't be lost on anybody, that we have a situation right now with our government as it relates to the drone industry, where there's this, and I hesitate to use the word because I think it gets overused a lot, but I will say it here, there's overreach happening. And that overreach that's happening is ironic because we're supposed to be a capitalistic free market, where people get in, they innovate, and that's how you get ahead. You get in, you put the work in, you innovate. And that's just not what's happening in the drone world right now. Instead, what we're seeing is the choice of the private citizen in a free market being taken away from them. Sure, we have a variety of other manufacturers. We've got Anzu, which is a great sentiment, which is awesome. But then we've got a litany of other ones that are guilty of some things that I'm not going to get into in this particular conversation. But you're taking away a choice from somebody in a free market, which is un-American, in my opinion. And then on top of that, you're creating legislation that I love what you'd brought up about democratizing the sky, that data collection process. You're not taking that away from people entirely, but what you are doing is you're making it very exclusive to a select group of people that have the means to invest in a $35,000 drone. I, like you, again, another parallel that you and I share, grew up in a low middle class household. At 32 years old, I'm doing pretty well, but I'm still low middle class. So, the fact is, I don't want to say it. I'm somebody that's a never say die type of guy. I'll go until there's absolutely nothing left for me to do. But I do worry a lot if DJI gets the boot, that I'm going to be one of those folks that has to move on to something else. And I've made drones my life for the last 7 years. And so I think that you empathize with folks in that position. I certainly do. I think there's a lot of us here that are really wondering, what's next if and when this happens. So, that is not lost on me at all.
No, I appreciate that. And like you had mentioned, we've known each other as entities, as people for a couple hours now. And it's gratifying for me to have an opportunity to talk to someone that has been around for 7 years that hasn't really interacted with me much. Maybe we've in passing, a thing I've done, I've known a thing you've done, I've seen your face or something like that. But to have the opportunity to have a rationalized discussion about our common interests and to be able to express to the people that do follow your platform and look to you as a guiding source for where we're going, that I, as Randall Warnes, only care about that. Mm-hmm. I will find a job. I like what I do. I like what I do in drones, but I like just like my approach to business. I've thought about hanging it up in the drone space before. I don't want to. I want this thing to work, but this is not about me. This is about everyone else. And if there was someone else had the opportunity to license DJI technology and do this, I promise you I would get behind it. But what I'm mostly behind is no legislation that impacts people that are flying DJI in the first place. And that is important for me, for folks to understand that, like, I'm trying to do a thing that was complicated and there's risk involved and sleepless nights and criticism that, I never expected I would have to take being just a guy that fights for the drone industry. Mm. But I'm doing it because It could be done, and I think it does some good. And so if you, Chris, or your viewers, listeners, have input on how we could do this better, like, let's do this together. Not necessarily as customers, but as people that are just like, what alternative can we create together in case? And will it do all the things you need it to do? And put pressure on me to provide all the justifications for you to see that as an alternative and breathe a little easier that if stuff hits the fan, that you do have a way to continue to make your living, even if you don't have, you know, a Mavic 3, you have something else that can serve you.
Absolutely. Now, we are sort of running low on time, but I do want to just circle back to, before we do run out of time, I do want to circle back to the Raptor. Again, we've sort of touched on a few different things, and it's sort of been a nice like flow of specific about the Raptor and then some more high level stuff. Enterprise, or we've got the Raptor, and then we've got the Raptor T. One's an basically a recreation or reimagining of the Mavic 3 Enterprise. The other one is the reimagining of the Mavic 3 Enterprise Thermal. In terms of the actual hardware, back and forth, everything pretty much one-to-one?
Yeah, the hardware, flight stability, flight control, all of that's going to be one-to-one. Some componentry has been moved out of China to Malaysia, but I mean, what you expect from getting from a DJI product, you could expect as far as quality, robustness, ruggedness, look, feel. There's a few things we changed cosmetically on the look outside of just the color. If you really look, you'll find details that we made differently. But yeah, it's basically, you know, same sensor suite, same data you'll be collecting from both of the platforms.
Okay. Now that brings me to my next question. There are some folks out there that already have like a Mavic 3 Enterprise or a Mavic 3 Thermal. When it comes to some of the accessories, the pieces that work with them, like one thing I'm thinking about top of the head, or two things rather, are batteries, RTK units. Mm-hmm. Are those both compatible with the Raptor if they've already had that hardware, or do they have to buy new with the Raptor series?
So it's the first time that anyone has asked me this publicly. I respond to these questions via email and stuff like that. Obviously, we are a standalone manufacturer. It's not about selling more batteries or anything like that. It's just like, it's a weird conversation to have as a standalone manufacturer that there is cross compatibility. But yeah, I think anything that works on DJI products, whether it comes to batteries, propellers, battery charging stations, those things for the most part should work because they're kind of sourced the same way, built the same way. There's some payload SDK stuff that I have no idea because I don't own it, so I haven't put it in. But I would assume that if you have CZI lights that you are using on your Mavic 3, that there is a pathway to get those working longer term with Anzu. I don't think it will work out the box just because the PSDK is written differently. So there's some modification that would need to happen in the same way that with the mobile SDK using Drone Deploy Pix4D, take whatever flavor of software that you're using on drones as well, that there's some modification necessary, but we'll get there in the near term.
Okay, gotcha. I figured that might have been the answer, but I know if I don't ask that question, there's going to be at least one person that asks in the comments, hey, can I use my... So I'm glad to sort of get some clarity on that. Let's talk about the SDK and the firmware, some of the more soft stuff rather than the hardware. Let's talk about SDK, and then let's transition into the app, because those are two things that are... based upon what's been going on with DJI and their software and their SDKs, but it's been rebuilt by American entities. So can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah. So the licensing agreement gave us both a firmware and an SDK as a snapshot in time. So let's say that this was August, September. It's like, this is where the firmware is today. We take all that code, we drop it over to you. Then we house that in the Aloft's AWS servers and modify it from there. So DJI doesn't have the ability to go through, modify it, change it, alter it. None of that, because it was transferred, right? There's no way to get back into it once you've given that gift. So we have changed the endpoints and modified it, built the Aloft air control app around that SDK, just like any SDK developer would in the future. But again, with data security in mind and all of that, we do anticipate that a large photogrammetry developer will release something on our SDK within the next let's say 6 to 8 weeks from now. And then from there, we will open it up to more developers, more development on that SDK, so that it's not everyone's forced to use one app basically, or two apps, or, you know, a finite number, that they can really find whatever entity is willing to put in the development efforts can operate on a Anzu Robotics drone.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. And in terms of the actual app that's used, so like with these enterprise style drones, you have that all-in-one advanced remote that has everything built into it that you need to be able to fly the drones that you have there, the Raptor series. You know, how does the software stack up against DJI's? And, you know, can people expect an experience that is similar in terms of the ecosystem?
Yeah, so natively on your controller, when you receive it out of the box, there's going to be an air control app, which is developed by Aloft.
Okay.
When you go into that app, it is going to look different at the beginning, and it's going to look different at the end. What is done is that we've removed all geofences from a DJI-based product, so there is no geofencing at all.
That's gonna ping with some people there. They're gonna go, oh, really?
It's a beautiful thing, because we believe fundamentally that it is the responsibility of the pilot to know where they're flying and that they have the appropriate authority to use the airspace.
Couldn't agree more.
We have not kept you from flying where you need to fly. Obviously, that's going to be welcome for folks that are showing up to jobs or public safety that are like, I don't need to go get, you know, a fly safe approval to do this thing. Mm-hmm. But Aloft is. I think they produce like 75% of all LANCE authorizations in the United States. So there is the ability to do airspace authorization, pre-flight checklist, fleet management, all sorts of stuff on the front end of the app. Mm-hmm. And then there's these pre-flight checklists. You could customize them. You could not use it at all. You could just skip all that and just say fly. Once you get into the flying, you know, you see the first person view from the camera and all of that, it is going to be a DJI-esque experience. Almost one-to-one. There's some things that are not exactly the same, but most of it is there. Most of the features that you're used to are going to be there. The only thing that today, which June 3rd, that we're having this conversation, I don't know when you're publishing this, but we're probably 2 weeks away from having photogrammetry, like mission planning in the Aloft app. That was something we had to add on our own. So for you to do zigzag patterns, you know, draw a polygon and have it do that data capture automatically, that's still probably 2 weeks before that's going to show up through an app update. But otherwise, the flight experience is going to be good. The user interface is going to be familiar. You're not going to be like, oh, I'm learning an entirely new platform. And then once you're done collecting data and you stop your flight, there'll be some requests of like, do you want to log this? Do you want to put notes, annotations? Did you, you know, make sure that you got your SD card? Did you make sure all the data that you wanted to capture is captured? Those sorts of things, as a post-flight checklist, which is going to look different. So it's like Aloft's contributions are like bookends. Aloft flight authorization stuff, Aloft post-flight checklist stuff, and then in the middle is going to be familiar DJI.
Okay. All right. Now, next question. It sort of jumps back to SDK, but it does involve the remote and the app and how all that works together. Yeah. You know, one big complaint that DJI has gotten, especially since the release of the Mavic 3 series, and again, we've talked about that SDK issue where they took that ability away from consumer users and made it basically that line in the sand. We've got our enterprise people that have access to that open SDK, and you've got your consumers that have the closed SDK that you can't use with like Drone Deploy, Pix4D, and other third-party data processing houses. With your remote, well, first of all, I'll ask this question. The data that you collect, the SDK is able to be compatible with like Drone Deploy on a desktop or Pix4D on a desktop. So you can take the data you collect and upload it to a desktop program and it'll process it, correct?
Correct. All the data is geotagged and the EXIF data is there from natively within the file format that you're capturing from Anzu. So if you have a collective of 1,000 images and you drop it into a processing system, it's going to kick out your 3D model, your, you know, 2D ortho, whatever. So there's no issue there at all. And then with the RTK module as well, all the RTK data is stored in the EXIF data if you're using that.
Okay. Now, next question. Are you able to install the apps directly to the controller? So could I go to a store via the app of the controller OS and then download like Drone Deploy's app or Pix4D and run the software through the controller? Is that possible?
So as of today, there's only one partner that's developing on the SDK outside of Aloft, which is in that process. Once that process is done, we're going to make sure that we're going to say, hey, how was the process? How was developing on our SDK? What did you run into? And obviously, these will be ongoing conversations throughout the process. But then we're going to validate that it didn't create any new cybersecurity, data security concerns by adding a third-party app to it, because now they're using their own cloud processing, all these other things, to just ensure that when we say data secure, no matter how you capture it on an Anzu robotics drone, that that is true. Mm-hmm. Then we'll open it up to the ecosystem. I would say that it won't be as simple as going to the app store, because not every app, not every thing on the app store is going to translate over. There's rewriting. So it's likely going to be like whitelisted apps that are going to say, we're going to say, okay, there's an APK file that you can put onto it so that it will, your app will show up. But it, I don't think it will be downloaded from the controller. I think it will be more so you download on a computer, plug it in, transfer, put the app onto the controller. That's likely the workflow, but that's a little bit TBD. I'm just giving you kind of foreshadowing of what I think it, how it's going to work, but we could find that we find a shortcut to it, or we open it up even more than we anticipated, but that's yet to be seen.
Gotcha. Okay. Excellent. One of my last two questions here. First one is, we've already sort of gotten an idea throughout this conversation, if people have been listening to this point or watching to this point, but just to sort of sum it up, what sets Anzu Robotics apart? You know, if you had to stand on a soapbox right now and say, this is what's going to make my company succeed, what is it that people should know about Anzu?
Yeah, so I'm going to start with the thing I would say second, usually first, which is I believe drone manufacturers in the don't necessarily have a culture of what we put forward, mm-hmm. which is extreme responsiveness, extreme public-facing mentality, saying what we mean, being held accountable. It's not a PR, you know, person that's saying all the language. It's not throwing, you know, sales guys to say, ah, nothing I can do, like, sorry. That's every drone manufacturer out there has patsies. I'm the CEO of a company. I've been very, very public facing since the launch of the company on the 17th of April. And I believe in a culture of listening, caring, responsiveness, public facing commitments, and doing what I say we're going to do. I think that that long term should be refreshing for folks in the drone space if this all works, right? You'd be entering into a relationship with a manufacturer that isn't going to let you down. But you have to first trust the hardware and trust what we've built. We have licensed technology from the leading manufacturer of drone technology in the world, undisputed, the best drone technology in the world, at a price that people want to pay or are willing to pay for the sophistication of what they're buying. Mm-hmm. That in itself is singularly unique to Anzu Robotics, and it's an incredible opportunity for all of us. We have taken out the concern of country of origin for manufacturing. We've taken out the concern of country of ownership and where the company that manufactures these products is based, which is all now in the United States. That's like a cool achievement, and I think that that's what gets us started. But it really, like, who we are is an organization that is trying to keep the source open for affordable, scalable drones. Mm-hmm. When we think about the hundreds of thousands of Part 107 pilots, if we all had to fight over the production capabilities of every drone manufacturer that isn't named DJI or Autel, you're waiting a year before you're seeing a drone, potentially, right? Like, not only the price is there, and not only the feature set is a complication, but you do not have scale at these manufacturers to support the entirety of the vacuum that they could be creating with this legislation. Mm-hmm. We stand to do everything in our power to make it so that those attributes, the price stays reasonable, the ability to purchase one tomorrow and, you know, continue to make your money and do your jobs that you have in front of you is there. And all while keeping your data secure and, you know, being future looking, not just disappearing when the going gets hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's solid stuff. And I appreciate you sharing that with us, because, you know, the more I talk to you, the more I'm like buying that. Yeah, this seems like it's going to be something that holds up. So last question for you. people want to learn more about Anzu Robotics. They want to learn more about the Raptor series, whether it's a question, just overarching, or they're actually looking to purchase a Raptor. Where's the best place for them to find information and a way to contact Anzu?
Yep. So AnzuRobotics.com, go on the website. I mentioned this to you before, but our FAQ is interesting. Like, look at it, because you'll find out a lot more about our company than just basics, just by reading through the FAQ. It is truly frequently asked questions, things that I hear all the time. And so get informed. My email is randall@anzurobotics.com. I will respond to everything. You could hit any of our mailboxes, but if you want to reach out to me, I will respond to you. I will tell you what I think. I will read through your droning journey. I will take your feedback seriously. So shoot me an email. And then the last thing on all of this is that we sell everything through a reseller network. It's something that I set up the DJI Enterprise reseller network back in 2015. I was a reseller two different times in two different ways. I believe in the reseller network being localized support, knowing, you know, how to get you something within 24 hours when you need it as a end user. So they are the kind of front line of defense, as well as the source where you would purchase anything. We don't sell any products on our website directly to end users for the purpose of supporting the reseller network and giving you localized support, while maintaining the fact that I don't have a trillion employees that are always available to do all the things, just to prove out this business as we steadily grow. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested, find your local reseller. If they're not Karen Anzu, what's wrong with them? If they are carrying it, I'm sure that they'll give you information. Our pricing is published online. We're not shying away from talking about the price of our products, but they will give you kind of a quote when you could expect it, all of that stuff. So rely on your local reseller, because they are a truly integral part to the drone industry being served in the way that they have been serving thus far.
And just for people that are listening right now, because there are some people that might be turned off by that idea of the pricing, you know, what are we looking at for the Raptor and the Raptor T?
Yeah. So Raptor is $5,099 and the Raptor T is $7,699. So, okay. Still enterprise level drones, enterprise level pricing, but significantly less than alternatives as they stand today.
100%. I don't need to dig too deep into that. Anybody that knows drones knows that that's still an extremely reasonable price for an enterprise level drone. So if you aren't sure where to find, after Randall just gave you that perfect explanation, I will have some links down below, including Randall's email. So make sure you check out the description of this video. Randall, I want to thank you so much for being on the LTD podcast. It's a pleasure, my friend. And I look forward to having you on again in the future. We'll do a check-in at some point, maybe six months, 9 months, whatever looks best.
6 months, bro. So much is going to change in 6 months. I'm going to be a different person in 6 months. I figure that we'll check in when necessary, but I hope that we're making bigger waves than a 6 month check-in.
That works for me, man. Listen, the quicker I can check in with you, the better everybody's going to be. So that works for me, whatever that looks like.
If I'm saying Merry Christmas or Happy New Year next time we talk, something's broken.
All right. You know what? Fair enough. Let's do a month and a half. We'll check in
at the end of the summer. Once this tan starts fading, and I have two young kids, I think whenever I see myself on something like this, I'm like, they just think I'm some dude that sits on a beach. I live in Salt Lake City. I have two young kids and I'm sitting out at a splash pad, just like watching them for hours. So this is not a glamorous glow. This is hard labor tan.
This is watching a kid go, "Hey, Dad, watch this for the 30th time in a row."
100%, brother. 100%.
No, but I do look forward to talking to you again. Yeah. Again, thank you for listening to this. If you're watching it on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe button. I was joined today by Randall Warnes, CEO of Anzu Robotics. And again, we'll have you on here in the very, very near future. So until next time, I'm Chris, the Drone Geek. That's Randall. We're out of here. See ya. Yo, what you